Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Underground. This is the Intel update for the 3rd of July, 2022, and as always, it is being recorded on the 2nd of July. So let's get right to it. Up first are some infrastructure incidents and concerns.
Boring!
I know, not exactly the most entertaining thing, but this stuff's very important, and we're going to break it down by region just like last time. So this slide and the slides following will be just the incidents and concerns that have occurred since last briefing. So first up is Pennsylvania, and this happened on the 27th of June. Wabtec Corporation in Erie, Pennsylvania. So these guys are a major conglomerate of railroad manufacturing companies. They do everything from running the software packages that kind of help the manufacturing process of locomotives and things like that. And they actually own companies that manufacture locomotives and parts and things like that as well. So this was a pretty big deal. It brought a lot of their systems offline, and they had to shut down production for quite a while. And there, as of today, there isn't any ETA for recovery that I have seen. But again, this is kind of a lesser known thing, but local media picked it up, so I wanted to mention it. Moving to the southeast, in Florida, on the 30th of June, Geographic Solutions Incorporated suffered a major cyber attack. Now, Geographic Solutions Incorporated, this is more of a national level problem, because these guys create and manage the software suites for most states' unemployment benefits. So as of right now, over 40 different states around the country are impacted by this. So this is most certainly not just a Florida thing. This is a nationwide problem. Most states use this one company's software systems for managing and applying for unemployment benefits. So again, classic case of state governments putting all of their eggs in one company's basket. Moving to Louisiana on the 30th of June as well, there was a very large natural gas well fire / explosion. This was again picked up by local media in Arnoldville, Louisiana, and right now they're not releasing the company's name, although it can only be like two or three companies. And again, the cause is unknown for this, but again, in the LNG world and the natural gas community, accidents like this are not particularly rare. It's just I wanted to mention it because we're trying to keep an eye on things like this. Moving up north to the east central Midwestern region, in Michigan, the Abbott Laboratories thing is still happening, so I kind of wanted to keep mentioning that. Abbott Laboratories, of course, being one of the largest suppliers of infant formula in the U.S., their factories are still offline due to cleaning and repairs from the severe flooding incident. This has actually been kind of suspicious. The factory themselves, they have been pretty tight-lipped about their status. They really haven't issued too many press releases. They're being very quiet about the whole thing. So I don't know if that's because of all of the issues they've been dealing with. They figured that, you know, legally it's probably best for them to just kind of stay quiet and handle things in-house. But you would think that a company that has this much importance in the country and in the world would be, you know, having press conferences every hour to update people. But really, they've been, you know, tight-lipped, and like company spokespeople have been, you know, pointing to press releases from 2-3 weeks ago for like updates. It's like, well, we're not. What's the deal here with this? So I don't know what's going on. I thought it was kind of unusual that Abbott Laboratories has been very quiet about this whole thing. Understandably, they're having a tough time, and I'm sure that there's a lot of legal liability still stemming from their potential bacteria contamination incident from a few months ago. But I just wanted to kind of keep it on the slide because it's still going on. Moving down to Illinois, we have some sad news for the steelworking community. U.S. Steel Corps has decided to shut down and sell two of its blast furnaces amid a rash of layoffs and changing policies at the company. U.S. Steel has decided to shut down a pretty good chunk of its operations in Granite City and shift other operations from steel finishing to producing raw materials. So instead of making so much finished steel at this facility, they're going to be focused on producing pig iron at this facility, which is a raw component used to make steel. According to the union, United Steelworkers, about 1,500 people work at this facility, and only about 550 will still be on the job once those blast furnaces are sold to a different company. As far as the reasons behind this move, U.S. Steel has made the decision to shuffle around their investments and is moving toward electric arc furnace operations rather than the traditional blast furnace operations. Of course, the union and the steelworkers themselves are utterly furious, as this looks like it is yet another betrayal in a long line of abuses from the company. I don't mention this one because it has super wide-ranging consequences for steel production, but rather sort of what it means. U.S. Steel shrinking operations in Granite City cuts deep, and this is most certainly a metaphor for how industrial manufacturing has been impacted over the years. And politics, too. Rightly or wrongly, people are going to feel some kind of way about things like this. People remember Trump coming to this facility back in 2018 as a way of showcasing domestic American steel production. And, you know, now look at the state of things. Again, I know that's not really how things work, and I'm not sure who's correct to point the finger at. Is this a governmental thing? Is this an economic thing? Is this a company thing? I don't know. Obviously, U.S. Steel Corp. has been having some issues for years with the steel market, even before Trump was president, so politics probably don't play too much into this one. And they, of course, still remain a very large supplier of steel, and they're building a very large next-generation steelwork plant in Arkansas right now. So again, this isn't going to put too much of a dent into the global steel market. And on top of all this, U.S. Steel specifically has a history of layoffs and furloughs at this exact facility back in 2009 and 2015, so it's not like this is particularly new. But I tell you, emotions have been running high in various industrial circles for years now, especially over the past few months, which is palpable for even someone like me who has nothing invested in things like this. I myself think there's just something tragic and kind of sad about seeing the shutdown or the sale of heavy industry, and I think that mood is resonating throughout many industrial fields these days. These are the same blast furnaces that made the steel for the San Francisco Bay Bridge, and for the Empire State Building, and for the vehicle assembly building at the Kennedy Space Center. These are the same blast furnaces that churned out steel to build 119 ships that landed our troops on the beaches of Normandy. These guys cut the manufacturing time for an entire tank landing ship to less than 30 days, an utter engineering marvel. Just think about the stories these blast furnaces could tell if they could talk, being part of the industrial rise of America and building the backbone of this nation. I don't know, maybe I'm being needlessly nostalgic about a simple blast furnace, but I just look at this event and think, you know, that's a shame. And right now, this one event highlights the latest chapter in the troubles that we're going through as a nation. But that's okay. Hopefully one day we'll be able to start putting America to work again and give those blast furnaces some more stories to tell. We've been through tough times before and come out the better for it on the other side. And wrapping things up for this region, in Ohio, the Quasar Energy Group in Wooster, Ohio, had a pretty large explosion at their biosolid processing facility. This, again, facility produces, processes, organic material to produce biosolids for various projects or for disposal, right? So three workers were injured in the explosion with non-life-threatening injuries, and I just kind of wanted to wrap things up by talking about that one. Out in the west central Midwestern region, really the only thing to talk about is the Amtrak collision that occurred on the 27th of June. So this was a derailment of an Amtrak train in the vicinity of Minden, Missouri. This was an Amtrak passenger train of 8 cars and 2 locomotives, which derailed after colliding with a vehicle that was located on a crossing. So for those of you who don't live in rural areas, it is very, very common. Most railroad crossings in this country are actually unattended. They don't have the nice crossing arms. They don't have sensors or anything for vehicles. It's just literally a road that goes over the train track, right? And this appears to be one of those crossings. So I don't know if we don't really know if the vehicle was stalled on the tracks or what the situation was. But 4 people in that vehicle, including the driver of that vehicle, were killed when the Amtrak train hit it going about 83 miles per hour. So most certainly a very sad story for sure. No one on the train was seriously injured. There were a lot of minor injuries, bumps and bruises and things like that due to the train completely derailing due to this collision. But again, this one doesn't look intentional. There's no real hint of that, but the investigation is still going on, and as usual, we want to keep an eye on everything to do with train derailments, so I just wanted to mention that. Moving down to the southwestern region, nothing really new to report on that. Just wanted to leave the Freeport facility on the slide because that situation down there is still ongoing. Freeport LNG will, of course, not be online until later this year. They cited September earlier. Now they're not really so sure. It's what it sounds like from recent press releases, but I guess we'll see when they're able to come back online fully. And out west, sorry, nothing really new to report since last briefing. I know there were a lot last time, but I haven't really found any worth talking about this time, so we'll go ahead and skip to the suspicious fires slide. So I changed this from church fires because a lot of these suspicious fires are going to be occurring at places that are not specifically places of worship or things like that. So let's go ahead and run down the list of just the fires that have occurred since last briefing. So the first one is on the 29th of June in Lufkin, Texas at the Triumphant Life Church. This one, the fire started in the attic, and I think it was in the middle of the night or in the early hours of the morning. So I think the local like atmosphere via the local media seems to think that this one's kind of accidental. I don't know, so I just wanted to leave it on there just in case. But moving down to number two, this one was a lot more suspicious. This occurred the day prior. Just up north, on the 28th of June in McAlester, Oklahoma, at the First Assembly of God Church. This church actually served as a polling place for a local primary election, local Oklahoma primaries, and it burned down quite significantly on primary day, just a few hours before the polling had begun. So the Pittsburgh County Election Board was declared as the emergency polling place, and the election went through. But man, anytime you've got a fire occurring at an election place on election day, that's very suspicious to me. So I kind of wanted to leave that on there, even though officially the cause is still unknown. Moving down to number three in Dillon, West Virginia, at the St. Coleman Catholic Church. This one, local authorities are calling it arson, and they're looking for any information people might have about it. This church was basically located in the middle of nowhere. It's a very, very rural area, and the church had already completely burned all the way down to the foundation and was basically just smoldering by the time the fire department was notified and actually got out there to it. So this one is currently being investigated as arson. Moving down to number four, on the 26th of June, the Revival Center of Cadillac in Cadillac, Michigan was discovered to be on fire. Again, there's hardly any information about this one on the internet, so we're just kind of left with cause unknown for this one, unfortunately. But for number five, this one was a lot more deliberate. On the 28th of June, the St. John Newman Catholic Church in Reston, Virginia was set on fire. By arsonists deliberately as a result of Roe versus Wade being overturned. We know this due to church property also being vandalized with graffiti and spray paint and things like that, referring to the Roe versus Wade judgment. So this one was again a deliberate attack. Moving on to number six, on the 26th of June in Memphis, Tennessee, the New Life Christian Center also burned. This one, there's no official assessment by local authorities as to whether or not this was arson. However, my guess is that arson is highly suspected because locals have been encouraged to call the local Crime Stoppers hotline with any information regarding this fire. So by my count, this is the second suspected arson event involving a religious institution in Memphis for the month of June, so that's quite interesting. Moving on to number seven, on the 23rd of June, the Siloam Methodist Church fire in Martin County, North Carolina. I mentioned this one last time, but following up, we've got some more amplifying information. It turns out that there was actually another fire event that occurred close by on the same night, in the same time frame. A camper caught fire about 3 miles away from this church, about 2 hours prior to this church catching fire. There were storms in the area on the night of the fire. But meteorological data does not indicate thunderstorms, which kind of puts to rest the concerns of lightning strikes, which are very common causes of church fires, right? But there was a decent amount of rain, which makes the whole story sound kind of fishy. So even the local sheriff has stated that it's kind of suspicious. Again, it's not known if this was an arson event or not, or what investigation can actually be undertaken on this one, but I just wanted to kind of mark this one as arson suspected just because of the comments of local officials. Moving down to number 8, on the 28th of June in Fort Myers, Florida, Manna Ministries, another church fire. Again, not much information on this one, really, other than just it happened. No real details from any local officials so far on that one. And moving on to number 9, on the 1st of July in Paterson, New Jersey, the Greater Assembly House of Prayer caught fire as well. This one is maybe a little bit more accidental. The cause is, of course, unknown, but this one was, the church was actually closed. It was not operational. It closed earlier this year in March. So it was basically an abandoned facility, and as we all know, abandoned facilities tend to draw people doing, you know, bad stuff these days. So I don't, you know, want to exactly attribute causation to this one, but I just wanted to point that out, that this was not a functional church at the time it was set on fire. Moving to a new separate slide on the kinetic incidents that have occurred around the country in the past 90 days. I think there have been enough of these kinds of incidents that it's worth kind of cataloging the more terroristic attacks that have occurred around the country. So you're going to notice a trend with most of these, but let's go down the list very briefly. First up is on the 7th of June in Buffalo, New York. A pregnancy center was firebombed by the group called Jane's Revenge as a result of Roe v. Wade being overturned. Same thing on the 31st of May in Seattle, Washington. A pregnancy center was vandalized. There was, and possibly the people who were vandalizing it possibly tried to set it on fire, but it didn't really work. Hard to tell on that one. But more deliberately, on the 9th of May in Madison, Wisconsin, another pregnancy center was firebombed, again with Molotov cocktails. On the 4th of June in Washington, D.C., another pregnancy center was vandalized with paint thrown on the front door and vandalized with graffiti as well on the structure of the building. On the 3rd of May in Peoria, Illinois, another pregnancy center was set fire. This one's a little harder to tell what the actual deal was. I don't know if it was affiliated with the Jane's Revenge group officially, or if they haven't claimed it, as far as I know. It might just be, you know, random people, again, carrying out attacks in a similar vein. On the 9th of May in Manassas, Virginia, another pregnancy center was vandalized, again with graffiti, similar to the Jane's Revenge kind of MO. Just yesterday, on the 1st of July in Nashville, Tennessee, another pregnancy center was firebombed. Again, it looks like it might have been a Molotov cocktail thrown through the window, just like most of these other ones. And in a similar vein, back a couple of weeks ago, on the 13th of June in Gresham, Oregon, same exact tactic, same exact MO, firebombing of a pregnancy center. So, again, move through these really kind of quickly, but they're all kind of really the similar style attacks. There have been 8 by my count over the past 90-ish days, so we're going to keep an eye on these. Of course, there are more that I haven't put on the slide. These are just the kind of the ones that have made big headlines. I'm still kind of working through some of the more lesser known and more unknown style attacks. And I wanted to call this, you know, like a terrorism tracker, but I don't know if I wanted to make it a little bit more broad than that, so I'm just going to call it kinetic incidents that have occurred over the past 90 days. So just wanted to kind of touch on some of these and start tracking some of these incidents, because I'm not really sure how federal law enforcement is. So I just wanted to make the average citizen very well aware that there are a lot of deliberate attacks being undertaken right now against various pregnancy centers. So this is not a joke. This is not a drill. This is most certainly a deliberate nationwide effort to target various facilities, religious institutions, pregnancy centers as a direct result of Roe v. Wade being overturned. So again, just wanted to bring that to everyone's attention. And speaking of the Roe versus Wade complications, I wanted to make an entire slide on the strategic implications of that ruling and Roe versus Wade being overturned, and some of the more interesting things that I'm seeing with regards to how governmental assets are being utilized. So again, there's been a lot of shouting and gnashing of teeth all over the internet from a lot of different perspectives regarding the Roe versus Wade thing. And, you know, my own thoughts on the judgment itself are irrelevant at this point. So I'd rather just focus on the more interesting little tidbits that are happening that not a lot of people are kind of focusing on. And the first two items I wanted to talk about here are data privacy. So the first one, which I want to preface this by saying, I think this is a fake story. I think this is all made up, but I want to mention it anyway because it's kind of made the circles circle around, and it's very interesting. And this is a story that Anonymous, the hacking group Anonymous, has allegedly hacked various fitness tracking apps and data, mostly female health apps that are intended to track things like pregnancy, right? So Anonymous has allegedly, again, deleted unspecified data from unspecified apps with the goal of making it so that this tracking data cannot be used by certain states, law enforcement in certain states, to bring murder charges against a woman who was pregnant, right, and sought out an abortion in states where it's now illegal. Again, I think this story is fake because the accounts that I have seen kind of portray this are very circular reporting, meaning that everyone that's talked about this kind of points back to the same Twitter account, which has a lot of followers, but it's very unclear as to if this is a real thing or if this is just some guy with Anonymous trying to claim something to get some notoriety on the internet. I think that's more of I think that's more of what this is in this case. But the next case is a lot more clear, and that is the second point there, which is Google deleting location history of abortion clinic visits. So Google is going above and beyond to delete evidence from their servers regarding women who travel to abortion clinics. So for instance, if someone in a state where abortion is now illegal, they went onto Google Maps and did some, you know, tried to use their phone to navigate to an abortion clinic, that would now, at least according to Google, be able to be used by a court, used by law enforcement to bring potential murder charges against someone in a state where abortion is now illegal. So again, I think, you know, I'm of course not a lawyer, but I think that's legally reaching. I think these incidents are very interesting because suddenly, all of a sudden, data privacy matters. Google is now going out of their way to delete evidence that might be used by state law enforcement in areas where abortion is now illegal, but they will not hesitate whatsoever to cooperate with federal law enforcement or even state law enforcement to put people like you and me in jail for just having a different opinion than they do. Remember the whole PRISM program, the whole Edward Snowden thing? It's almost like we forgot how much Google cooperates with national spy agencies when courts are saying that it's illegal to do so. But no, Google's going to go out of their way to protect people who are having abortions illegally. Moving on to number three, New Jersey has begun the sanctuary movement. The West Coast is, of course, going to be doing something similar, but New Jersey is the first one to kind of put it in writing, a whole stack of documents, allowing easier access for out-of-state abortions to occur. So my guess is that a lot of states are probably going to kind of, you know, create some of this kind of union together, I guess, with regards to abortion and allow a lot more easier access to that. So that's my guess as to what's going to happen on the state front. But what's more interesting to me is the things that are happening on the federal front. And that's what the last two bullet points are today. The Department of Health and Human Services, the federal HHS, they have created a new website for, depending on what language you wanted to use, it gives resources, quote-unquote resources, to people seeking abortions, right? So the HHS has created, in light of Roe v. Wade being overturned, trying to go around the Supreme Court, really, and stick their federal noses in the Roe v. Wade debate, even though the Supreme Court has, you know, clearly overturned Roe v. Wade due to federal interference, right? So, again, this is a whole complex issue, but I find it very interesting that the Supreme Court sends Roe v. Wade back to the states to decide, and yet the federal government is trying to encourage abortion at every possible moment, right? Very interesting. And this, you know, Department of Health and Human Services is creating more resources for that kind of thing to help states get around abortion laws. If they have like laws on the books preventing abortions, they're going to try to do everything they can, and they already are doing everything they can to encourage people to break those state laws. Another interesting thing is the last bullet point there, which is the HHS walking back a lot of the data privacy issues that they themselves caused with the virus that shall not be named. Again, this is the same freaking government that stole all of your private data, used your cell phones to track your movements, right? Sent federal agents out to door to door to make sure that you were staying at home and quarantining, right? This is the same government that did all of that, is now trying to walk back those things, and now suddenly data privacy again matters. It's very, very interesting, because we've had 2 years of the government saying, oh no, we're not spying on you and your health choices whatsoever, to now, oh my God, we're spying on you and your health concerns, and now that data can be used by states to prosecute you. So that's a very interesting thing, and that's why I think Google and Anonymous are kind of popping up in the news. Private companies trying to say, all right, hey, all this data that we collected is now the shoe is on the other foot, is it not?
Well, well, well. How the turntables.
So I think it's very, very interesting that now all of this data stuff suddenly matters to people, and I think that it's very, very interesting to see where this is going to go. Now, my bet is kind of coming back to the websites that the federal government is creating to offer these quote-unquote resources, right? My guess is that the federal government, and this is just a spitball on my part, just a total guess, my guess is that the federal government is going to start mailing, it might be a federal program, it might be HHS creating their own sort of online pharmacy thing, I don't know, but my guess is that they're going to start mailing abortion pills to states where abortion is illegal. Because I'm already starting to see that with a lot of these more leftist opinion posts by mainstream media on the internet, you can clearly see how they would do it. And I think this is a very interesting thing to think about. See, what the Department of Health and Human Services at the federal level can do is they can create websites, right, to start mailing out abortion pills to people who want them. All they got to do is sign up, you know, just like they did with the virus tests, right? You go to a federal website, sign up for it, and they'll mail it out to your door, right? I think that's a very interesting way for the federal government to do that, because what is the United States Postal Service? It is a federal agency, right? So states cannot stop the United States Postal Service from delivering mail. And I think that's a very interesting way that the regime can encourage people to break state laws. And again, it's very, very interesting to see how this might play out. Of course, this is just a speculation on my part, but if I'm going to play devil's advocate here, if I'm going to red team this a little bit, that's my guess as to what's going to happen, is that the federal government is either going to directly allow, or they're going to set up direct agencies within the federal government to do so, or they're going to allow companies to start mailing abortion pills to states where abortion is now illegal, and they're just going to say, what are you going to do about it? Because as we all know, when it comes down to it, there's always been this battle between state law enforcement and federal law enforcement, and it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. So that conflict between federal law enforcement and state law enforcement and the federal Congress and state Congresses, that's going to be interesting to see how that works out, because we've now entered into this new age where this is not a, you know, your Watergate Nixon era where your, you know, federal law enforcement and your federal presidency, right, they're, you know, breaking laws behind people's backs and things like that. No, we're not in that era anymore. We're now in the era where the White House press secretary can get in front of a live TV camera and say that they're not going to follow the Supreme Court's decisions. They did that with the federal jab mandates. People seem to have forgotten that just a few months ago, the federal regime made it very clear that they're not going to follow, that they did not follow the Supreme Court's mandates on and judgments on the jab mandates, right? And the mask mandates and things like that. So, you know, what was the quote from the press secretary? We see it differently, right? What I think is that the federal government, this particular political regime that is ruling the executive branch at this particular moment in time, I think they're going to do whatever they can to break state laws or encourage other people to break state laws and create that conflict between the state government and the federal government. So very interesting time, and I think that right now there's a lot of stuff in the news about this Roe versus Wade thing, and there are a lot of implications for what this judgment has done and is doing, and what people will do in reaction to it. I don't know about anybody else, but just seeing the reactions that the leftists have to this Roe versus Wade being overturned, it is utterly shocking to me. It's quite surprising the level of depravity that's out there in the world, and it's things are kind of crazy, and I don't think they're gonna be any less crazy anytime soon. Now, I will briefly mention, because people have asked about it, and they've been kind of wondering, what's the overall threat? Like, is this going to be another, 2020 Summer of Love type situation with regards to this, Roe versus Wade being overturned? Generally speaking, I will say I don't think so. And here's why. When we've seen the violence in the past, it's been due to terrorist groups like BLM and some of the more lesser known like Pan-African groups that kind of, militia groups that kind of get together, like NFAC and people like that who kind of got national press. Some of the more smaller groups, which are like regional or state-based groups, those are the guys who are most likely to riot about things, right? I just don't think that BLM and other black separatist groups like that are motivated in the same way that white liberal groups like Antifa traditionally are motivated. They're just not motivated by the same things, right? So when we saw a lot of the violence last year or year before last in 2020, that violence was mostly centered around BLM issues and sort of Pan-African issues and police shootings, right? That's where most of the violence came from. And of course, Antifa was more than willing to participate in that violence in areas where Antifa has a good presence, like, your Seattle, Portland, places like that, New York, places like that. So, but when it comes to the Roe versus Wade thing, really, I don't think you're going to see mass rioting. You're going to, of course, see mass protesting, really disgusting and grotesque protest actions around the country, but it's not really going to be mass looting and rioting and violence like that. Of course, I could be all wrong, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say I don't think there's going to be a tremendous amount of rioting following the Roe versus Wade thing, especially since we've seen that the judgment's come out. It's been, a couple of weeks since it came out, and of course, the leaked documents came out months ago, but the official judgment has come out, and we haven't really seen a whole lot of mass, like complete burn the city down style rioting. And I just think it's because it's not something that's motivating for a lot of the groups that are well known for rioting, right? Like BLM. That's just what I think. I just think that mass rioting is not going to be really on the menu so much for this Roe versus Wade thing. Now, that doesn't mean we're out of the woods just yet. I do think, and as evidenced by what I've already talked about with our kinetic incidents, we are going to see throughout probably the rest of the summer a lot more firebombings of pregnancy centers, a lot more kinetic actions being taken against churches, religious institutions, places that offer pregnancy resources that are not abortion services and things like that. So my guess is that's what we're going to see, a sharp increase in that, as we have seen over the past 90 days. My guess is that will continue. Isolated attacks, probing attacks, skirmish-style actions against soft targets that are available. Now, the flip side of that coin is I think that in some of the states which are going to start increasing abortions more, some of your more leftist states, again, some of the states that have been championing extreme late-term abortions or even post-birth abortions, that kind of activity is going to increase people who are living in those states to commit attacks against places like abortion clinics. So the other side of that coin, again, is that places where abortion is being championed even more are going to anger the populace. It's not like the only people who live in these states are leftists, right? There are people who oppose abortion that live in pro-abortion states. So my guess is that we're also going to start seeing very limited attacks on abortion clinics as well. So something to keep in mind is that if you know you live near one of these locations, either an abortion clinic or a pregnancy center that helps people avoid abortions, either side of the aisle on that is that both of those places are going to be pretty good targets. So again, either one of these facilities, religious institutions, pregnancy centers, any kind of center that offers medical care but does not offer abortions or is against abortions, those kinds of places are going to be very, very soft targets for the foreseeable future. So that is something to most certainly keep an eye on, especially considering the federal government's stance on this, right? We're already seeing the federal government use its executive branch agencies to help people have abortions in states where abortion is illegal. So my guess is that I would not be very optimistic in federal law enforcement investigating crimes against pregnancy centers and things like that in states where abortion is legal. Right? That's just my guess. Again, like I mentioned, I think I mentioned before, when it comes to church fires, when I was talking about church fires last time and this time as well, the lead agency for investigating church fires, you want to guess what agency that is? It's the ATF. So again, do you trust the ATF? I know I certainly don't. So just getting that all out in the open, talking about things as honestly as I can, I do not think that federal law enforcement is going to do a whole heck of a lot. They're certainly not going to pull out all the stops when trying to combat these more solidified groups like Jane's Revenge, like Antifa, people like that, especially the groups that are funded by people outside this country or by prominent politicians in the country. So again, I know that's a lot of information to take in, so I just kind of want to let that soak in for a bit, and hopefully that encourages some thoughts, and hopefully this encourages everyone to please be vigilant out there, because violence is most certainly a tactic that is used by both the federal government and by certain factions in society of all walks of life, right? So just be careful out there and realize that right now is a pretty tense time, right? So let's go ahead and move on to significant governmental actions. And I don't really have a whole lot today. As a matter of fact, I've been doing a lot of research on other stuff, so I haven't had time to kind of figure out what the federal government has been doing over the past week or so. But I did want to mention that today, or more accurately, July 1st, was Recession Day. So happy Recession Day, everyone. We have officially met the textbook definition for being in a recession.
Methinks somebody made a boo-boo. Maybe we didn't know how to use Quicken. Yeah, that could be it.
And a recession, an economic recession, is defined as two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth. And we met that criteria for quarter one and quarter two of 2022 yesterday on July 1st. So we are officially in a textbook recession according to the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta, which is the agency that tracks this kind of data. So again, I just wanted to point that out for everyone out there who's probably going to see a lot of mainstream media try to spin this as that, oh, recession's a good thing, or we're not technically in a recession, or we're technically in a recession, but it's not really how the data works. No, we're technically in a recession. We've had two quarters of negative GDP growth. That is a textbook definition of a recession. So I just want to get that out there for the record, for when this brief stays on the internet forever. That we recognize that we're in a recession now as of July 1st. And wrapping things up with just one international issue this time, I, again, didn't have time to research much else, but I did want to talk about the Netherlands this time around, and this is the protesting that has been going on around the country. So thousands of farmers across the country have been protesting this week as the Dutch government goes ahead with their extremely radical climate agenda. And I say radical because that is exactly what it is. We here in the U.S. think that we have it bad, but man, the Dutch government is enacting policies that restrict the ammonia emissions from livestock operations, and enacting other population control measures that ensure that many farmers simply will not be allowed to grow food or raise livestock. So yeah, I hardly think that the Dutch government is going to take the Sri Lankan approach and basically create mass starvation with a stroke of a pen. After all, it is really hard to picture starvation being a thing in the heart of Europe. But in a time of global food and fertilizer shortages, I think that any attempt to stop farmers from doing their job, especially under the bogus claims of climate change, this should be looked at as a clear and present danger and a deliberate attack on our global food supply. So I guess we'll see if the Dutch government goes ahead with these policies. But Dutch citizens, from what I understand, don't protest very often. So, you know, when the Dutch get upset, you know that there's something going on here. So I guess we'll have to see how this affects the European food supply when and if some of these more draconian emissions policies come into effect. So that's all I have for today, everyone. Thanks again for watching. Here are the sources for this brief. There are three sources slides, and you can, of course, get all of these sources from the PowerPoint slides that we drop in PDF format on Odyssey and on Utreon. So thank you again for watching, everyone. Thanks for your support. We're going to continue to track some of these more kinetic events as they pop up and kind of hopefully give everyone a lot of stuff to think about as we move forward into this hot summer, right? So thanks again for watching. Thank you again for all of your support out there, and we will see you next time. And as always, fight in the shade.